Washington, D.C. is seldom a dull place, but it's been more exciting than usual of late. Last week, the Supreme Court handed down a couple of major decisions, and just as those were being digested, Justice Anthony Kennedy, long the swing vote on the Supreme Court, announced his retirement. With Donald Trump picking his successor, that seat on the court would presumably convert from swing to full-time conservative. Democrats in the Senate can do little to affect the vote on Kennedy's successor since Republicans outnumber them. Both of Oregon's senators are Democrats, including Ron Wyden, who joined us just before the 4th of July. Senator, good to see you once again.
Thanks for having me. And modest exception on one point, because you guys do such a wonderful service for the community. This notion that there's nothing the Democrats can do about the Supreme Court vote is just not a judgment I share. Political change doesn't start in Washington, D.C., and then trickle down. It's bottoms up. And for example, 130 million Americans are protected now from discrimination against pre-existing conditions. The next Supreme Court justice is almost sure to decide on whether the Trump position, which is to get rid of that protection, should be sustained. You make this a referendum, the Supreme Court nomination, on whether you're going to turn back the clock to the days when health care was for the healthy and wealthy, I think you're going to move a lot of voters.
Well, what about, you can get the voters into the streets and certainly make a case for who the next justice will be. But just in terms of procedure, I mean, can you really do much of anything when there are more Republicans than Democrats?
The challenge is to translate political activism into actual support. Now, we already know several Republicans have serious questions. Senator Susan Collins, Republican of Maine, just said on Sunday on the national political shows that if a judge was hostile to ensuring that women, not government, made choices about their health care, she wasn't going to support that judge. But you have to accept the proposition that I started with, that if there is enough of a groundswell, particularly on something that affects millions of families, like whether you're going to turn back the clock, let the insurance companies go back to clobbering people with pre-existing conditions, Americans weigh in, and that really moves the Senate.
Do you think for the same reason then that it would be less likely to happen that after the next justice is confirmed that states would start passing laws to ban abortion to test Roe versus Wade?
First of all, I'm not going to speculate on losing. And clearly, procedurally, Mitch McConnell has set up a double standard. He's going to apply to a Trump nominee a different standard than he applied to an Obama nominee. I just want to make sure that this doesn't all get lost in process questions. I know I've been home for 3-4 days. I've been going into Fred Meyer stores and been on the streets talking to people. They asked me about the Supreme Court. I said, well, this case is coming out of Texas. It is wending its way to the Supreme Court. It is all about the Trump administration wanting to turn back the clock on health care. You know what Oregonians say? They say, turn back the clock on health care. I want to move forward. I want to do more, for example, to ensure that you hold down the cost of prescription drugs, to make sure people understand that health care is a basic human right. So you tell people what's at stake, and people get worked up pretty quickly.
And they've gotten certainly worked up about the separation of families at the border with Mexico. It's been making huge news. Are you satisfied, Senator Wyden, that federal agencies have enough information to reunite the parents and the children that have been separated?
I am not at all satisfied with the performance of the federal agencies. I'm the senior Democrat on the Senate Finance Committee. We have a very broad swath over policies relating to child welfare. And your listeners may have seen me questioning Mr. Azar, the Secretary of Health, just a few days ago. I think that agency has just been disconnected from reality. I asked several questions at the outset, whether they had made sure that parents know where their kids are, what steps were they taking to reunify the families. And the Secretary of Health talked about how there really wasn't a problem because the families had keystrokes and they had access to portals. And I tried to explain, these are parents who are in jail. They don't have any computers. They don't have any telephones. The idea that they're going to have all these online technologies as if they're sitting in the comfort of the Office of Secretary of Health and Human Services is just absurd.
So for the people who do insist that we should be doing something to protect the border, I mean, how should people arriving with families be handled?
Well, let's start protecting their rights. I mean, for example, ICE has come up, you know, again and again. I believe that agency needs to be overhauled. I mean,
not abolished, but overhauled.
Overhauled, and let's put some heat on ICE and really look at what they're doing. For example, I think most fair-minded people would say we should set aside the processes they've used to obtain access to information and the families without a warrant. I mean, that is a basic tradition in the United States. You don't have warrantless searches. So I really do want to see it overhauled. And by the way, for your listeners, it's a good place to start. 19 ICE agents, people who are crackerjack ICE officials, have all written recently that they think the agency has lost its historical mission, which is to work on national security, not taking kids away.
There's a certain amount of glee, though, it seems, from people who see Democrats talking about the talk of abolishing ICE as a winning thing for Republicans in November. Do you see it that way?
What I believe is solving problems. And when an agency has got 19 of its own people saying that the agency has lost its mission, that ought to be a real wake-up call.
Let's move on, Senator Ron Wyden, to Internet business. The Supreme Court said recently that online businesses should be paying sales tax. Obviously, Oregon doesn't have one, but Oregon businesses do sell online in other states. And you had asked the Small Business Administration to give some assistance. In what form?
Well, first, I want Oregonians to understand what the case was about. The case, in effect, overturned the Quill decision, which was you had to have physical presence. By the way, most of the big internet companies already have physical presence. They've already got stores and trucks and things like that. What the court did not do, reject two of the critical laws that I have written. One, I wrote the Internet Tax Freedom Bill, which ensures that Oregon businesses, our e-commerce businesses, are not subject to multiple and discriminatory taxes from up to 12,000 taxing jurisdictions. The court did not touch that. The court also did not touch the law I wrote barring taxes on Internet access, which is enormously important to students and seniors and others who literally depend on the net for a lot of the information that is essential for them. Now, with respect to the letter I wrote with Senator Shaheen, I do think that proponents of, in effect, unraveling the laws that I've written just say, well, you know, we're just going to be able to easily come up with some software and then everybody's going to be able to collect taxes. Make no mistake about what this issue is. What this issue is, there are officials in some states who don't want to take the political heat of actually collecting the taxes. So they would like to transfer the responsibility to, say, a small business from Oregon and say, carry that burden, and that's what's at stake.
So it's the company being expected to collect on itself rather than the entity that is taxing?
Well, what the law essentially says is that you can have a small business in the state of Oregon, which doesn't even have a sales tax, in effect become the tax collector for somebody else, yes.
Oh, boy. Let's stay on business and move into the hemp business. So I understand the hemp bill got rolled into the farm bill in the Senate. Is that right?
It did. You don't often see a headline, the McConnell-Wyden bill has passed. And what I proposed a number of years ago, because my wife Nancy was pregnant with our third child, and we were walking through a Costco near our Southeast Portland home, and I saw a big bag of hemp hearts and said, really good for digestion, low fat, great source of protein, and it made it clear it wasn't grown in Oregon. And I had heard from farmers over the years that they wanted to be able to grow it. And I turned to my wife and I said, you know, if you can buy it at a local Costco, it seems to me our farmers, not just the farmers in Canada or China, ought to be able to grow it. And I said, I'm going to propose that we legalize hemp and our farmers ought to be able to grow it for the reason I just told you. And my wife said, oh, dear, that's way too logical. That'll never happen. Well, the United States Senate has now moved a bill that Mitch McConnell and I authored. I'm pleased Senator Merkley, Rand Paul also are supporting it. It'll go to the House, and I'm pretty confident it's going to land on the president's desk.
While we're talking about hemp, let's talk about its sibling, because there are moves at the federal level to do something about legalizing marijuana. What do you see happen? Is it going to happen in this Congress, do you think?
This is really a textbook case of hypocrisy in Washington, D.C. And suffice it to say, it's not the only one, but this is really, really something else. You got all of these officials, Jeff Sessions would be a perfect example, who are constantly preaching about states' rights. States' rights, states' rights, morning, noon, and night. They go out on the floor of the Senate and give these odes to states' rights. What they really mean is they believe in states' rights if they think the state is right. And they don't agree with what Oregon and several other Western states have done, which is to legalize marijuana. So we now have this bizarre situation where Oregon has spoken on an issue that's historically been left to the states, to legalize marijuana. But because the federal government and Jeff Sessions don't want to actually show that they believe in states' rights, the federal government tries to obstruct the implementation of it. So we have this bizarre situation where people who run legal marijuana businesses in Oregon are practically carrying around cash in wheelbarrows trying to figure out what to do with it, which is a crime problem. And also something I have taken the lead on, because I'm the senior Democrat in the Finance Committee, is the tax laws. The marijuana businesses in Oregon, which is a legal business, don't get the same tax breaks that other businesses do. So I and Senator Merkley are taking the lead to try to change that.
Let's talk about Senator Merkley just a bit, because I believe it since the last time I talked to you that he has converted to a no on the Jordan Cove LNG export terminal and pipeline. And are you still in the middle of that?
Well, I have a different experience because of where I've been, you know, in the Senate. I was chairman of the Energy Committee when this just started years and years, you know, ago. And obviously, it was closely divided. And I said, I'm going to make sure both sides have a chance to get heard. And I took that position early on. And of course, the Trump people have tried to derail it. I mean, Gary Cohn, the president's first and premier economic advisor, a few days into the administration said, well, we're just going to, you know, pass that pipeline project in that small community in Oregon. And I heard that, and I immediately said, you're going to what? We've got this thing called the law. You're not above the law. There are environmental and energy laws, and I'm going to make sure, as a senior member of the Energy Committee, because I then had moved to the Finance Committee, I'm staying on both of the committees, I'm not just going to let them throw the law into the trash can. They're not going to be able to fudge the environmental laws, the eminent domain laws. And with respect to green energy, my policies are pretty clear. I proposed taking the 40-some tax provisions on energy and throwing them all in the trash can. They cost like $10 billion a year. I have proposed what I call the more green for less green, and you get rid of the 40-some breaks and you substitute three, one for clean energy, one for clean transportation fuel, and one for energy efficiency.
So at this point, you are neither yes nor no on Jordan Cove?
I am for prohibiting the Trump administration from breaking the law in the decision-making process surrounding Jordan Cove. That has been my position since day one when I was chairman of the Energy Committee. And frankly, it's more important now than it was before, since Gary Cohn signaled that the Trump administration pretty much said that the laws didn't apply.
Senator Ron Wyden's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. We talked about you being the ranking member in Finance Committee, still in Energy and Natural Resources, also on the Select Committee on Intelligence.
My older child calls it the so-called intelligence.
The so-called. That's a great name. The Intelligence Committee in the Senate, though, has not been nearly as active as the Intelligence Committee in the House in dealing with the investigation into the possible collusion between Russia and the Trump campaign or any other entities during the campaign. Richard Burr seems to be holding some restraint, but, I mean, is there going to be a report that comes out of the Senate Intel Committee?
Well, first of all, this investigation cannot responsibly be concluded until you get to the bottom of the follow the money issues. And the reason I say that is the heart of our responsibilities as a member of the Intelligence Committee is to work on issues relating to counterintelligence, because the way you compromise somebody is through money. So follow the money is a prerequisite to doing counterintelligence work. And so I have looked at a variety of issues that relate to following the money. I also use my finance committee staff to do it. But, you know, suffice it to say, all you have to do, I'm not going to talk about anything classified, is you can read in your newspapers, your newspapers are available to all about how the Trump administration sent people to Moscow during the campaign to size out possibilities for Trump hotels and things like that. It was clear their relationship with these Russian oligarchs who have been so close to so many Trump officials really cries out for a full airing of the follow the money issues. And I've told Oregonians at every one of my town meetings. I had town meeting number 900 yesterday in Lane County. I have said at each of those meetings, I'll say to your listeners right now, that as Oregon's guy on the Senate Intelligence Committee, I am not going to let this investigation get swept under the rug. We're going to stay at it until all the facts come out.
Given the deep divisions, though, over this and absolutely everything else, it seems, in Washington, other than hemp, I guess, is the conclusion of the special counsel probe likely to be inconclusive or just lead to more arguing? How do you see things coming out there?
Well, again, I'm not going to speculate about what the conclusions are. I will tell you that there have been a number of really important breakthroughs that haven't really gotten out to the public because there weren't fights. For example, if you had told me in January of 2017, when this Congress started, that Orrin Hatch and I were going to get a 10-year reauthorization of the Children's Health Insurance Program, a program important to thousands and thousands of Oregon families, everybody would have said, you're hallucinating. We got that done. And we got it done to a great extent. I kept making the point to the Republicans, you say you're interested in health care, the Children's Health Insurance Program is a lot better bet than a lot of this other stuff you're talking about. Same thing with foster care. As you know, Oregon has had very, very serious foster care problems. We got through the biggest change in decades with respect to those at-risk kids. It's called Families First. And you used to have two kind of options, sending the kid off to foster care. They're good foster care homes, but certainly a few of them leave something to be desired, or to leave the young person in the home in a far from desirable experience, parent caught up in drugs or something like that. Families First gives the states the resources so that if there's an opportunity, for example, for a grandparent to step in as a parent is getting their life together, the grandparent could do it. So I know these things aren't in the headlines, but if you had predicted those kinds of things, or the legislation I got passed to transform Medicare into a bill that really deals with cancer and diabetes and heart disease and strokes, which is the future of Medicare, dealing with chronic illness. If you had said we were going to get that passed in January of 2017, everybody would have said no way.
Senator Ron Wyden, thanks for joining us
today.
Let's do it
again.
Jefferson Exchange. Okay.
Thank you.